Great. We'll get started. We're very happy to have George Buckley, Chairman, President, and CEO of Triple M to present.
Well, good afternoon, everybody. Talk a little bit about the first quarter, and you can see here from the slides, had a good first quarter. Sales just a fraction under $5.9 billion, and sales were up about just a little bit under 10%. Operating income rose by 10.6%, and EPS was up to $1.28, which was 14% growth on last year. Free cash flow, $670 million, and we also announced a two-year, $7 billion share repurchase. So I think pretty good fundamentals in the first quarter. Show you again a little bit more detail. You can see here where the growth was. It's primarily international, 8.7% growth, and interesting of note is about 2% in the United States. Now, the next slide is going to show you one of our challenges. If you take a look at this, the balance sheet here, and you take a look, in particular, a comparison between the 2006 numbers, the first quarter 2006 and the first quarter 2007, you can see the challenge we face. As we're growing internationally, we're using a lot of working capital to do so. You see how the inventories moved there from about $2.4 billion to a little over $2.7 billion, and receivables moved from $3.1 billion to almost $3.5 billion for sales growth of about $450 million. So this is one of the challenges that we face, and it's an acute case where we have great growth internationally, lower growth in the United States that stretches our supply chains that historically were built up to 50 years ago. But nevertheless, I mean, it was a great quarter, and people obviously look at the 3M numbers, and they see high margins, decent growth rates, great returns, and ask the question, quite logically and reasonably, where can this go from here? Well, in fact, it can go quite a long way from here because what we have done is preserved great manufacturing discipline in Six Sigma, primarily applied to the manufacturing operation. But our principles really are to defend our premium returns, protect our premium margins, reemphasize innovation, leverage the central overhead, which is large in our company, it's almost 10% of sales, and then add growth and tax benefits as new value creators for our shareholders. And you can see, without sort of torturing you over the slide, the kind of tax rates that we have up here with our competitors, and we're sat at about 34%, probably roughly the largest of any industrial manufacturer in North America. So how do we go about doing this value creation? How do we go about growing? Well, we start by growing the current core. If any company wants to have a growth plan, this is the place to do it. This is the place where you know the markets the most, you know the technology the most, you know the competition the most, and you know the manufacturing the most. This is the place you start. This is the place where you are. This is the place where you are the best. And if you take a look at my little key up here on the top, we're talking about here, concentrating at the top of the pyramid where 3M is traditionally great. But you also have an opportunity also to extend the core. Forgive me for being down here. I don't do behind the podium all that well. I find it very constraining and confining. So we've got to extend the core here, but this is really just nudging down from the top of the market just a little bit into the upper middle market. This isn't about starting at the bottom and building up. It's an opportunity to build where we're strong. It's an opportunity to build out white space. It's about becoming more important to our customers, expanding the product portfolio, and basically making this a little bit larger. And all companies have this issue, which is to invent a new future, because if you don't, somebody else is going to do it for you. That's the basic problem that you face. So it's about beating competitors to the future. You must plan for cannibalization of this part of the market and invent something new. And then lastly, again, all sticking still in the core, is build broad long-term competencies And what that really means is, look, if you're in the optics business, then concentrate on optics. Find a way to build that base out and not just necessarily just concentrate on films or whatever is in that particular portfolio. So start in the core. This is where you know the most and where you're likely to succeed the best. So here's the bit we just talked about. But then you sort of extend this with some simple concepts, making complementary acquisitions that can, they follow the core strategy. They support various adjacency players that you're talking about, and mostly tuck-ins, not big ones. And they can be enhancing technology, capacity, distribution, or building, in some cases, local brands. Then you've got to go off fishing in a few new ponds. And the new ponds are what we call EBOs, emerging business opportunities. And we are fishing in a number of these ponds. They follow typical megatrends in the world today. We help them with small M&A deals, and we're targeting these areas primarily, RFID, track and trace as we call it, minerals extraction, oil and gas, and food safety. And last but not least, going for international growth. And the subtleties of that are things like going local in brands, local in manufacturing, and by the way, you leave nobody out, because even though we may see great growth in places like Eastern Europe, the Gulf, Asia, you cannot grow in a company like ours if you leave out Western Europe, if you leave out Germany, if you leave out UK. So you've got to focus everywhere, although obviously this is the place where we expect the most growth. As a technology company, one of the things that we have to do first is to create an environment where people can invent. That's traditionally our hallmark. The way that I've tried to describe this is, first of all, it's about product innovation. It's about many things. It's about people like me creating an environment where people can feel free to invent. You cannot create ingenuity, invention in a pressure cooker environment where people are trying to sort of make you mark time every day. And I think we're going to come up with this in just a minute. You cannot reduce invention to a process. You cannot stigmatize invention. And my argument here is, if you could reduce invention to a process, we're an invention company, then everybody could learn it, and therefore you could never expect to be anything other than average. So there's a little thing here that I put on the bottom that's very important, is you have to create an atmosphere where you can mix in a little magic, where people can take risks, and where you can emphasize creativity in the people that work for you. Now, you can't give up on the other side of the issue, because one of the dilemmas for a company like 3M is you have an invention process which is by its very nature disorderly and intermittent, that's got to merge with an operational excellence and manufacturing process that's got to be absolutely disciplined. And making these two match is very important. And it's about lots of things. It's about lean methods, Six Sigma, and many things we could go through here. But then it's also about taking these two competencies and driving market expansion, filling in white space of products, geographic expansion, and so on and so forth. And these things together will buoy profitable growth. If you take a look about this, this one is about products. This one is about efficiency, primarily manufacturing efficiency, and this is about customers. This is the kind of atmosphere that you have to try to create in a company like ours. And I try to stress this, this isn't just about efficiency or about invention, but it's about many more things. And all companies, certainly manufacturing companies, compete on six platforms: cost, marketing and brands, distribution, technology, service, and people. And we don't have time, unfortunately, in this presentation to go down all the details here, but it's more than just inventing and doing Six Sigma in manufacturing. Far more thoughtful than that. Now, a lot of people have asked me today and asked me other days about 3M's supply chain. Now, historically, if you wanted to develop a product in 3M, and you came along to the powers that be and said, I want to make some kind of a widget, What we would do is we would say, okay, well, look, we don't want to spend any more capital on building that business because we're not sure whether it'll work or not. But what we will do is we will allocate you some marginal capacity for doing operation number one in Canada. Operation number two might end up in Alabama. Operation number three, manufacturing operation, might be in California. Operation number four might be in France. And so this is what we did. We had raw material. We're going to play it being the red business, by the way, for the moment. You'd move it into a plant, and the first plant is shared with six other people. And then you move it to another plant, which is shared with three other people. And those three may be different than those. And by the way, these are all three in businesses. And then you move it to a fourth plant, and you move it, sorry, a third plant and a fourth plant, and eventually you'll move it to a distribution center. And every time you do this, you have cost sticking on the way here, you have time sticking, and in about half of what 3M makes, this process takes to go from raw material in to finished goods out, takes about 100 days. And of course, you can imagine that if, as we have, about 65% of our manufacturing in the U.S., but 65% of our demand outside the U.S., if this takes about 100 days, and then at this point I have to put this on a boat and send it to China, and it takes me another 40 days, or to India, and it takes me another 80 days, and then I've got some different credit conditions in that marketplace, my order-to-cash cycle suddenly gets up to around 200 days. So when you see 3M's showing low growth in the U.S., and high growth overseas, you see these supply chains stretched out as you're trying to push product through this torturous system. And by the way, when you're trying to forecast what happens on cost here, if the mustard colored business here does poorly, but red business does well, the overall overhead allocation in this business, these guys here can get impacted by that, and therefore it makes just the whole forecasting challenge that 3M has is very, very difficult. So that's what we face today, and that's one of the things we're trying to fix, and I'll talk about that in just a minute. Now here's what we're beginning to do. Here's our same model. We're beginning to dissolve these supply chains and move all of these things into single, what we call one-piece flow plants. That's basically what we are doing. And sometimes they're being built overseas, sometimes they're being built in the United States, but that essentially is what we're trying to do. Here's one of the challenges that I faced when I walked into 3M, and there are other challenges on R&D that I won't show today. But this shows our historical capital spending from 1997 to 2006. And you can see what happened here is, just to sort of decode this, this is sustaining, so this is keeping the lights on, it's replacing tooling and things like that. The green is strategic investments. So this may be building a new lab somewhere. Yellow is growth capital. And it's growth capital in 3M's core. And you can see what happened is as we moved forward from 1999, 2000, down to 2003, we progressively cut, red by the way is the optical film investments, we cut the investment in 3M's core to the point where here, no money was spent on investment in 3M's current core. In fact, if you take a look at this and take a look at, say, these 3 years, 2002 to 2004, we spent probably less than $100 million funding the core of a $20 billion corporation. So that's one of the issues that we faced. And you can see we began to spend in 2005. And in a company like 3M, where it takes about 2 years to build a manufacturing plant, even if you invest in 2005, you don't begin to see the benefits until 2007. So this is one of the challenges that we faced. And so the model that we're trying to follow is this one. Instead of doing what we do today, which is this, stuff moves from place to place to place, we're going to do this. Raw material in at one place, you work on it, you move it out to a distribution center. So this is our model for the future. And if I can just sort of just re-emphasize the issue of working capital, as we have most of our manufacturing in the US and it's relatively inefficient supply chain, and we take it from here and move it over here, this is what happens. This whole thing just goes out and causes quite a number of challenges. My job is always try to make something which is quite complicated seem relatively simple. So hopefully this slide will make what we're doing seem relatively simple. If we think about this as a pipe, I've got my little photograph of the pipe down here. Obviously the pipe has a sending end, it has a receiving end, and the pipeline itself. Let's think about that as it applies to the challenge of getting growth. At the sending end of the pipe, you have to invent more things. It's about R&D, and it's about getting scientists back in the invention business, which we kind of got out of for a little bit, or at least de-emphasized. It's about, at the receiving end of the pipeline, selling and marketing better. So it's about finding better ways to get access to market, putting more feet on the street, buying brands that penetrate those local marketplaces, and stopping unnecessary complexity in SKUs. And it's about the pipe itself, about having a pipe that's big enough to supply the demand, and so what you need to do there is have a large enough diameter pipe, figuratively speaking, and a short pipe, figuratively speaking. And last but not least, we need to stop the pipe leaking. We need to stop price giveaways and market share loss. So this is a very simple concept to think about the supply chain of a product to market. And here's some of the things that we're doing. You can see products in the USA, plants in the USA, in Canada, Mexico that are being built. I mean, we show you this to show you this is not some pipe dream. This isn't some sort of planning by PowerPoint. These plants are being have been selected and are being built. And here we go, another bunch of them. Russia, India, Poland, Korea, China. These are new plants which are under construction to solve these supply chain needs that we talked about just a few minutes ago. Another question I've been asked by a lot of investors is, okay, George, I kind of get most of what you're saying, but I don't understand this want to go to the middle market. Here's how 3M works. 3M creates a market, and over a period of time, that market grows. And then after a while, our intellectual property position begins to wane a little bit, and what happens? Well, competitors come pushing to the bottom of the market. 3M says, oh no, I don't want to take any of that 20-point margin business down here. That's kind of, it's not very good business, so I don't want to take any of that. 20-point operating profit margin business, by the way. So we won't compete there. We retreat, and eventually these people munch up this business, munch up this market, and eventually we exit. There's about 20 markets that I could point out to you where 3M has done this. And my argument about growth is, if you want to fill a bucket, the first thing you should do is to make sure it has no holes, and if it does, fill them. This is our sticky bucket. Now, I'm going to pose a question to you that I don't really expect you'll answer, and that's what we're doing now, is we're pushing into this upper middle market. I'm going to pose a question that was posed to me by an investor in St. Paul. They said, George, shouldn't you guys really get out of the Scotch tape market? I mean, it's really a kind of ratty market. You know, not much technology in it. It's commoditized. It's in mass merchants. It's obviously a very bad business. So I think you should sort of get out of it. Well, with this particular investor, it was a very nice young man. I had this obviously, are you mad, look on my face. And I said to him, you know, we make better margins in Scotch tape than we do in optical films. And now, why is it that we do that? And the reason we do it is because we have such a wonderful share in the top, the middle, and the bottom of the market. So one of our plans here is not just to try to grow here, but to draw a line in the sand and say, we're not exiting businesses. This is a plug the leaky bucket strategy. And so the objective is not just to grow, but it's to bulwark and defend that market and not retreat. And here's how we do it. Classic examples. We do it very, very well in this business, in the Scotch tape business. And we're always very careful to differentiate, both in performance and price and technology, what's up in this top part of the market, the middle of the market, and down in private label. And by the way, we do it also in the industrial sign business, right from the bottom all the way through to the top, and in respirators also, forgive me. So this is something we're very familiar with. This is not something, we haven't left our door, our minds at the doorstep. This is something we know how to do. Let's talk now about complementary acquisitions. That was on an earlier slide. Again, sometimes people ask me about, well, you know, acquisitions, is it all about bulk? Is it just about buying volume? Well, it's not. It is firstly about strengthening the base by filling in white spaces, about finding a way to become more attractive to your customers. It's about facilitating growth in a new market. It might be buying a brand that penetrates a market you're not in at the moment. It may provide a key new technology or brand like we had with Brontës. And it might also, as in nylons, enable you to cut that 2-year manufacturing cycle time for building a plant by allowing you to do a fast capacity acquisition. Some acquisitions that we've been doing in recent times, here's a diagram that shows the historical growth rates and the time, and much of what we've been doing have been incrementally positive to our overall growth rates. Example here, Brontës, great technology acquisition, something that we could have done ourselves, but we might have spent several years doing. Let's talk now about EBOs, quite a number of these going on in 3M. This particular one, Track and Trace, is one that I like to talk about. It's really a technology that's answering these four things. Who am I? Where am I? How am I? And once you take this information, how can you improve and advantage me? That's what Track and Trace is all about. It is my belief that within 10 years, every single thing of value on the surface of the earth is going to be tracked and traced, including you, your dog, your children, your car, and anything that you own which is of value. This is a great space for people to grow in, us included. Electrical power transmission, we all know the problems of growth and the problems of the environment, and what 3M has invented is a product that will allow you to put somewhere between 2 and 3 times the power down the same cable, the same right-of-way, in an overhead power transmission application. And it's a small business today, it's growing very nicely, and with one more technological breakthrough, can be a great business for 3M. Typical invention on the part of the consumer and office people, lovely new products, new applications, bringing great stuff to our homes. So lots of creativity in 3M. Let's talk now about international growth. This is our distribution network internationally. And it is absolutely stupendous. This is as good or better than any company 2 or 3 times our size. And I won't sort of torture you with the keys, but the orange ones are the sales and marketing operations. The blue are where we have manufacturing sites. And the green are where we have labs installed to help with localization and local invention. So a great network for growth. And you'll see here of our roughly 24 billion sales this year that we'll come up at, what our international sales growth has looked like. So we're forecasting about another 10% more than this year. So we'll be over $15 billion by the time 2007 is over. So bringing it all together, what does all this mean? Well, if I reduce our strategy to 5 principal elements, here's what they are. It's getting our labs back in the business of developing and releasing new products faster and better prioritization of what we do and don't do and where we do it also. To go local, or in some cases regional in brands and sales coverage to drive growth. And as we mentioned earlier, to get all elements of the supply chain closer to our customers, to shorten the supply chains, improve service, and drive out working capital. To accelerate our technological capability, distribution penetration, customer satisfaction, and our manufacturing capacity through acquisitions. And to leverage that growth, stop price leakage, and trim non-essential corporate services. long slide, but this is fundamentally what it all is. Now, we're not only about acquisitions and we're not only about organic growth. We have done some thoughtful things. We've done some selected divestitures. We've done two or three so far since I came to the company. And we have unrolled a different capital strategy, I think. So when you put all of this in the pot and stir it, organic growth, divestitures, capital strategy, and acquisitions, I think it sits together very, very well. On cash back to shareholders, this is something of a surprise, I think, to many people. For the period 2001 to 2006, we've returned 103% of reported net income to shareholders via dividends and share buybacks. 103% in that particular period. And here's the profile of the share repurchases and of the dividends. This is really quite staggering. Last but not least, I think this is my last slide. Here's what it is. We're targeting 2x IPI, which is around 8% growth in the longer term. On EPS growth, 12 to 15%. And we never want to let our investment returns drop below 20%. And it's about, I'll just repeat myself here, drilling into the core, moving towards scale where markets are large. Innovation remains a vital key, a vital part of who we are. Moving toward higher relative reach share in smaller markets, I'm thinking things like dental, for example, and heavy up on globalization, accelerated M&A, and we understand the need to carefully trade off share and growth and continue to build our enduring franchises that we have. So this is 3M, and thank you very much for listening.
Any questions? Down here. Wait for the mic to come around.
Given your free cash flow and your current prospects for growth, what's your view on your current leverage?
Well, I think the leverage is going to get significantly higher now that we're doing all these share buybacks. And we ask that question from time to time, and just to sort of restate, we have no opposition to moving from AA to single A. So we have lots of choices. We can do great share repurchases, capital investment, internal investments, and dividends. We can do it all if we so wish. I don't think we have anything holding us back.
George, can you explain the trade-off between efficiency and flexibility of your operations when you move to consolidate manufacturing into a single plant from various plants? You are taking a bit of a risk in terms of demand staying up and giving up some of the operational flexibility you have today in terms of responding to changes in demand.
Can you just repeat the first part of the question, please?
Just the trade-off between operational flexibility versus efficiency of having all production dedicated to one plant versus having more flexible production?
Well, there in some of our businesses don't scale well. Optical films don't scale well. Size matters, so we've concentrated that in the United States, and it will stay there. Some of the businesses, however, in the classic 3M core of adhesives, abrasives, and other types of films, they're relatively easy to scale. We can build small plants in many different places, and they work very well together. So we wouldn't attempt to replicate optical film in multiple countries. It is what it is. But we will replicate some of those core businesses in other countries. It almost seems to be that we can put abrasives plants down and make money anywhere. I mean, there are even arguments that I've had with some of my colleagues is, why should I invest in this optical film plant when I can just invest, 50 multiples of $10 million and get as much with, almost a riskless return. So it's really about growth and it's about scale, but we can scale in many of these small places without too much worry.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Q1 obviously was a strong quarter ex the working capital. You know, do you think that was a sort of a changing event, that the strategies that you're talking about that you've been positioning for, I guess, you know, over 18 months have actually started to take hold, or is it still going to be a lumpy progression to get it where you want it?
That's a very interesting question. I think at the psychological level inside 3M, people now have bought into this. It's a joy to see in the R&D community people really inspired again and working very, very hard on making 3M great. It's also nice to see in the manufacturing community to say, you know what, we've lived with this a long time. What you're talking about here, George, is much, much more sensible. So all the good news is all of that kind of seems to have taken hold. Now, vis-a-vis the first quarter, though, and we went into the first quarter, and we knew the year-over-year comps were hard. We knew that the economy was cooling, because we'd seen that in the U.S. economy, I'm speaking right now. We'd seen that in the fourth quarter. And we went into the first quarter with an extraordinarily disciplined approach to this. Absolutely leveraged the central overhead. We actually spent more money on R&D. We didn't stop doing any of this stuff that we're talking about on capital. And the great beauty about the first quarter, we did a great first quarter without optical. Without optical, without pharmaceutical. So I think the first quarter for us was a sort of a watershed event. It showed that with great execution and great discipline, we really managed the company well, is what actually happened in the first quarter. And so we proved to ourselves we can actually do that and do it on a repetitive basis. Now, I mean, we all know that you get various market dynamics happening, some seasonality that creeps in, but fundamentally it was a great psychological quarter for 3M, and my assessment is that people have got the bit between their teeth now on this, and they know how to get this done. As we've experimented in the past year, have we got all this stuff done? No. We've got a lot more, you know, several years of this kind of rebuilding to do. But the great thing to have seen from the first quarter is people really now have figured out how to do it.
So. As you undertake the supply chain initiatives, what are the prospects for margin leverage?
I think, obviously, I've not shown you a map of our supply chain here. You almost couldn't separate it from a sort of Warden Persian rock. Very, very complex supply chain. I think that the choices we're going to have is some trade-offs between return on invested capital, growth, and margin. What I think we're going to end up doing is we're going to get the growth. There's no question about that. I don't expect to see any significant erosion in margins. Those days where that was possible are long gone. So I expect to see margins maintained, you know, reasonably within the range that they are today. And our target is to make sure that returns are well above 20. And you know, with all this working capital disappearing from the system, who knows, we may be able to see some upside of that. So, you know, it may be a bit of a pipe dream, but I think we can have a little bit of our cake and eat it too here if this is done well. And, you know, we'll do some things here less well and more well. We all know that. But I'm pretty optimistic that we can pull this plan off, plus or minus a little bit of gaps here and there. Mike?
Could you please comment on how the construction of the new plants is going?
Sure. There are about 18 of them underway right now, spread over the launch dates essentially between about now and the early part of next year. The first one, the big Korean OHNS plant, that's the respirator plant, opens on July 11th, running absolutely to plan. The optical converting plant in Poland is now open, running absolutely to plan. And the Tegaderm expansions in Aberdeen in the United States, all running pretty well to plan. Only one plant out of this 18 or so haven't seen any kind of pressure on, and that is the Russian plant. It's a small plant, by the way, in the greater scheme of this particular thing. has gotten delayed a little bit, 3 or 4 months, purely due to permitting and the bureaucracy of the of dealing with the Russian government at the moment. But there's no reason to believe that that will be any kind of a major challenge to us. So it's going well. Yes, sir.
Stressed innovation, and you've also stressed temporary plateauing, I think, in your rate of return on invested capital because of working capital and so on. Could you give us a look 2 to 3 years out? Will the composition of your sales by product weighting be shifting, do you think, or is the innovation necessary? Is the innovation going to allow for a breakout in returns on invested capital as your distribution network changes, or will it just allow for the maintenance of that return on invested capital?
I think that it depends on obviously exactly how much capital expenditure we have to spend to get the physical infrastructure in the right place. But at least the way the mathematics goes right now, we can see improvement invested capital. I'm not going to make you a forecast by how much, but I think more important for us is in shortening these supply chains, these hugely stretched supply chains, that what we can get is be in a position with our customers to drive more growth. So I actually think this is why I'd mentioned earlier, with the logistics costs that get cut out, all the support costs that get cut out, we think we can kind of have our cake and eat it too and play some slightly different tunes on this particular fiddle. So I remain optimistic that nothing bad is going to happen to margins. There may be some upside in margins. I think we've got a great plan here that will bolster return on invested capital. And the physical infrastructure that we get will allow us to be closer to the customers and respond to them. And by the way, the changes in the physical structure allow us to drive down the effective tax rate. So we actually get, with these investments, and it's tremendously hard work, and there's a lot of work to be done. But once these are completed, we think we're going to be in great shape, and we'll get multiple benefits out of what we're doing. Thank you, sir.
I think that's all the time we have. Thanks, George.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody.